Welcome to the Spencer FC Podcast!
All right, mate, how you doing? Welcome back to another Spencer FC Podcast, episode 13 today. Let's hope it's not unlucky for me. Now, a few things to talk about before we crack on with today's podcast. A big thanks to DreamTeamFC.com, our sponsors. Check out their football website, DreamTeamFC.com. Now, today, I've got a very good friend of mine on the podcast. We're going to be talking about FIFA, all things FIFA. You may have seen there's a new president in town. Gianni Infantino has taken over. We're going to talk about him, talk about what he's going to stand for. Is he going to be improvement on Blatter? But more importantly, Ellie Menjam, who's my friend that's going to be on the show with us from Australia, who's going to be calling in. He is an absolute encyclopedia of all things football, and he's going to share some of his knowledge with us, actually properly analyse what happened over the last 12 months. What was the thing and the catalyst for this big revolution within FIFA? And is the future bright, or are we going to expect to see more, you know, dodgy dealings in football's governing bodies? It's going to be a lot of fun talking to Ellie. He's a great guy. I've known him for a long time. One other thing to tell you is that this is actually going to be the last podcast for a little while. It's going to be the end of season one, if you like, of the Spencer FC podcast. We are going to come back, I'm sure, in the future at some point. I don't know exactly when yet, but it's been a lot of fun doing it. Again, thanks to Dream Team FC for supporting it. So hopefully we'll end this season on a high, talking about FIFA with Ellie Menjam. And let's jump into that chat now with Ellie. Right, guys, I am joined by Mr. Ellie Menjam from Down Under. How you doing, Ellie?
Hey, mate, going well. Going well.
Nice to hear from you. What's the weather like in Australia right now? It's like 1 o'clock, 1 p.m. here in England, so I'm guessing it's quite late there.
Yeah, it's about 11:15. It's nice and muggy as it always is in Australia. We've just got consistent mugginess going on right now, so not missing Europe at the moment. However, with these old FIFA elections, my God, I wish I was in Zurich.
Yes, of course. That's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk all about what exactly happened, you know, when it all kicked off sort of last year with all the FBI, you know, investigation and who was to blame and who was doing naughty things and who was doing good things. Yes, and we're also going to talk about Gianni Infantino, the new FIFA president. He's taken over from Sepp Blatter. What do we think he's going to hold in the future for FIFA? And also, you know, is he a good guy? Because some people have been talking about the fact that he's like a neighbour of Sepp Blatter. He lives down the road from him. How much truth is there in that?
Yeah, it's remarkable. The guy's not only from the same country, same region. His town of Brig is a 6-minute drive to Blatter's hometown of Visp. So they are essentially the same. A lot of people are the same guy, at least in terms of backgrounds, you know, experienced football administrators working for UEFA from Swiss villages. They're both, you know, they speak about five languages between them, but I believe there are going to be differences between the two for many, many reasons.
Okay, we'll talk more about Infantino later on and whether he's going to be the kind of FIFA president we all want him to be. But let's start at the beginning. The FBI investigation, where it all kicked off, and those, well, even before then, you know, before then, what the FBI were actually investigating. What happened at FIFA? When did it start to become this corrupt entity? And, you know, how bad was it?
Oh, well, this has been going on for, I mean, what we know right now, the last 25 years, but most experts know it's been going on since the tenure of João Havelange, who was the president before Blatter. He really kicked off the sleazy ways of the FIFA officials. He basically realized that the power in running the organization was through, you know, kind of these back payments to the smaller nations, and realizing there's a famous anecdote where he used to have the face of every single FIFA member of all 200 odd nations, and he remember all their faces because, you know, it obviously boosted their ego and it helped him in the votes for presidency. So this has been happening since the 70s, since FIFA really realized the power of their sport and the power of selling it to the media. But where this has really kicked off, the situation we've got ourselves with the FIFA Extraordinary Congress and this vote kicked off, I believe it was May 27 last year, just as our summer was coming to Switzerland, with a dawn raid by the FBI. And it was the stuff, it was the kind of thing you see on The Sopranos, 6 a.m. raid. There were, I believe, 22 FIFA officials charged on some of the most serious offences possible. And they were charged under the RICO Act, which is the Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organisation Act, which is basically an act designed to bring down the mafia in the 70s. And that is what the US authorities are using to bring down these guys.
That's amazing. So it's literally like a proper, you know, criminal investigation in many ways. So what was it that actually kicked it off? What was the reason that the FBI decided to get involved in it there and then? Like, what was the kind of end of the tether?
What we've realized since is actually that they've been working on this case for over 5 years, just holding tight, waiting for the right time to make their move. They, from what we know, it was about 2009. Others say it was 2010, straight after the US lost the World Cup hosting chance. The FBI started going, what is going on with this organization? They make absolute millions. There's got to be something shady going on, because just the characters and the stories that were constantly coming up. And I think Qatar, a nation half the size of Yorkshire with 50-degree temperatures during the summer when the World Cup was meant to happen, was the final straw. So essentially the FBI went, okay, we want to find out what the hell is going on. So they actually went to a and that's where the story gets fantastic. They went to a guy called Andrew Jennings. Andrew Jennings is a bloke, 72-year-old journalist. He's a journalist. The man lives in a glorified shed on the Scottish border. He has mutton chops and only wears khaki. And this guy, who doesn't even like football, used to work in investigating the Olympics, and someone said, you think the Olympics are corrupt? Check out what's going on down the road at FIFA. He's gone in and written books, and no one listened to him. Everyone said he was a lunatic, and except for the FBI, who said, hey, listen, Andrew, tell us a bit about this organization called FIFA. And then obviously he gave them his books, and one thing led to another. And then while they're doing that, another bloke from the IRS, who was actually used to live in England, who loves his footy, came in and saw that they were talking about FIFA. And there was a bloke he was after who Jennings referred them to, called Chuck Blazer. Now, Chuck Blazer was the general secretary, and this man deserves a podcast just on his own. He was the general secretary of CONCACAF, and he was also on the FIFA Exco. This bloke, he was an American, failed button salesman, who realized in the early 80s, mid-80s, that this sport, soccer, wasn't making the kind of money that, you know, these huge behemoths like the NFL and the NBA were, despite the fact that this universal appeal. So Chuck basically went down to Guatemala at the time, and Trinidad and Tobago, where CONCACAF used to be the headquarters, and went up to a bloke by the name of Jack Warner. We'll get to him later, and said, listen, Jack, you know, you've got the influence, you've got the friends in this organization. I've got the experience to kind of really promote football and get all the commercial benefits of the game through the US and through North and Central America. If we team up together, you go for the president of CONCACAF, we can really take this on. Jack Warner believed in him. They went for it. He won the election. He won the presidency of CONCACAF. And for 20 years together, they ran that organization. And boy, did they run that organization, to the point where Blazer had a contract for himself where he earned 10%. Listen to this. 10% of everything that went through CONCACAF accounts. We're talking ticket sales, scarf sales, hot dogs. They called him Mr. 10%. So imagine, for comparison, UEFA, right? There was a bloke who just got 10% of everything that UEFA earned. That's what this guy was earning for CONCACAF. And whilst earning that, he decided over 25 years not to pay a dollar tax, which meant obviously when the IRS heard about him 25 years later and heard the FBI were investigating him, what'd they do? They said, let's jump on board and let's do this together.
Wow, that's incredible. So, I mean, these are just a couple of the names, aren't they, that have kind of been criminalizing football for so long and making money from it. And I think one important thing I want to get your guidance on is, because I think there's a lot of confusion as to who are the bad eggs within FIFA, who are the people that have actually committed crimes, and who are the people that maybe allowed it to happen but aren't actually the criminals themselves. So can you shed a little bit of light on that?
Well, what I think is that we don't actually know who, as I'm concerned, almost everybody involved with FIFA is guilty. And that might sound a bit overdramatic, but what is coming out is just one official after the other. The highest of high are being indicted. And I don't know who to trust anymore. In terms of people like Blatter, and we spoke about this before on the rail, that Blatter perhaps wasn't corrupt financially. A lot of these guys aren't corrupt financially, but they're corrupt with power. They want to keep their positions, because obviously these positions keep them relevant and they keep them in their jobs. So really, who's innocent? I can probably tell you more likely who's guilty than innocent. So that's probably not a question for me right now. I'd say give it a few years, let the FBI really start racking up the charges, and then we're going to see. One thing that's really interesting and that I'd like people to note is that Andrew Jones has come out and said is basically the charges that FIFA are laying on these guys and the process they're doing it with the RICO Act, that mafia law I told you about earlier, basically it's designed to bring down people who are in the mafia. right? So now you think about the kind of people that are involved in the mafia. They're the kind of guys who don't talk. You know, you just don't snitch. You know, they'd rather die. They'd rather do 20 years. FIFA executives, they're not built for this. You know what I mean? They're not gangsters and mobsters. So essentially what we've got here is a bunch of guys who haven't been charged with anything before. They don't have a criminal record. All of a sudden, the top dogs of the US authorities are charging them with the biggest crimes. They're all singing like canaries. They're all snitching each other out. And what we're going to have is just this top-down effect of finding out more and more. As one guy speaks, the next guy will speak. It's what we saw with Chuck Blazer. Chuck Blazer is at the heart of this investigation because it's his information that's given us what we've got today. And more importantly, it's the way he gave him that information, which is a great story.
It's crazy. It's just like there's so many layers to it. And this is another question I've got for you, because if this investigation is ongoing, right, and this investigation isn't finished just because Sepp Blatter's been replaced, etc., then how deep does this go? Because, like, as much as, obviously, Infantino coming in and replacing Blatter is good, if he is a good guy, which we'll find out later, like, if the FIFA investigation is still ongoing and there's still potentially people out there that are going to be investigated and are going to be found guilty of things, then I know it's easier said than done, but is it not better to kind of think of a complete replacement organisation for FIFA? It's so kind of ruined from and reputation has gone out the window that we should just start from scratch, a new organisation with all new representatives. Was that ever discussed? Was that ever an option?
Well, it was discussed amongst the fans and the media, but the FIFA officials don't care. They've got their comfy job. They're happy with it. They don't want to lose their job. So that's the problem, that unlike any other government, they don't answer to any people. They answer to themselves. And that's the reason that this level of corruption, this culture, was able to exist and not just exist, but, you know, increase and fluctuate and become what it became. And that's the problem there, that they don't answer to anyone. So why would they change anything? But what has happened now with the US authorities and the FBI really honing in on on FIFA the way they are, they have had to change. And not only that, that's why, and that's what's really important we'll touch on later, is that this Congress didn't just have an election. They also voted in a host of reforms, I think more than a dozen really, really important reforms. And there's many more that still need to go through, of course. But essentially, the FBI and the Swiss authorities were very, very close or might still be very close to actually bringing down FIFA themselves. Right now, all they've done is charge FIFA officials. But because this corruption is so systematic throughout the organization, if they really wanted to, the US Department of Justice could actually charge FIFA, the organization, as a corrupt organization, almost as a mafia, and bring it down. But essentially, I think what's happened is the leaders have pleaded and gone, no, FIFA's not guilty. It's these officials that tainted the body. Please let us show you that we're going to reform and change, which is what Infantino's promises have been. And that's why I've got a little bit of faith, because they realize now, if they don't change, if they don't seriously change, they will be brought to justice by the biggest authority in the world, the United States. That's what's so interesting, that now the US have had enough. And as we've seen, when America's angry, you know, get out of our way.
You were saying earlier there was an interesting story with Chuck Blazer. Tell us more about that.
Yep. So basically, Chuck Blazer, obviously, he's enjoying his lavish lifestyle. Let me just get some of these facts up from Blazer about just how much he enjoyed the FIFA life. He received tens of millions of dollars in illegal back payments in exchange for his votes and influence. He's now admitted to that. He enjoyed it so much that he racked up $30 million on a FIFA expenses card, charged FIFA over $16,000 for parking expenses every year. He rented an apartment in the Trump Towers on FIFA money, and then he rented a penthouse beside it for his cats. He got so morbidly obese from his famous three lunches in Manhattan that he was confined to a motorized scooter, of which he rode around Manhattan with his pet parrot on his shoulder. I mean, if I wrote this in a movie, you just wouldn't believe it. And this was the bloke who ran CONCACAF. At the same time he was doing this, it came out that the Trinidad and Tobago women's team, obviously come under the banner of CONCACAF, had to do a public shout out for funds so that they could fund their team's US trip to Florida, which is only obviously a short flight up from Tobago. It's unbelievable. But anyway, this bloke, Blazer, he's riding from one lunch to another, that's as the story goes, on his motorized scooter through Manhattan when he's stopped by the FBI, who basically say, hey, Chuck, this is, you know, Bob from the FBI, this is Tim from the IRS, and I would like to have a chat with you. And he said, you know, get stuffed, I don't have to answer to you. And they basically just unfold in the middle of the street all the charges they've got up against him, which totaled over 100 years in prison. And he basically just said, well, he bent over and said, what do you want? What do you want from me? And so essentially they said, you're going to be our informant. The arrest was kept secret. So this was back in, I think this was back in about 2008, 2009, actually. So the arrest is kept secret, and they, it's now come out in a recent ESPN documentary. They he had to wear an adult diaper because of his health situation. They wired that adult diaper up with recording devices, and also gave him a like a little fob, a little keyring for his car. But it was actually a microphone disguised as a fob, and basically they sent him into the biggest meetings. And that's why we still haven't seen anything yet. And that's why it's going to be so much fun when these leaders finally get extradited to the US and have to face their charges, because they've. It's all come out. Blazer was their undercover detective, and he recorded everything. And there's one particular trip he made during the London Olympics. Obviously, there was a football tournament, and all the biggest FIFA heads were there. And he sat in the middle of some of their biggest meetings, and recorded everything. So I mean, it really is the stuff out of like an espionage film, but perhaps one of those comedic ones with Martin Lawrence or something. Because I mean, the idea of a morbidly obese man on a motorized scooter with a pet parrot recording one of the most corrupt sports bodies in the world with an adult diaper and hooked up to recording devices. I mean, where do you start?
It's absolutely ridiculous, mate. It literally sounds like some sort of animation. Like, it'd be a great. It would be actually really funny to watch that someone should do a little caricature of him. But yeah, so Chuck Blazer basically is like a cartoon character who's tricked his way into power and basically used it very, very irresponsibly. And he's the reason. So he's not going to face criminal charges now? Or has he managed to negotiate his time in prison down? Like, what's the latest with that?
Well, the latest with Chuck is he's in a New Jersey hospital with, I believe he's got cancer of some sort. He's now talking, he can't even talk anymore. He's confined to a hospital bed. He talks, he corresponds with the FBI through a keyboard. He doesn't have much longer to live. In fact, in his after everything came to light, he finally had his court case, and I don't have the transcript with me, but he's basically said that his final years, he just wants to come clean and give everything. If he wasn't in hospital, they'd have him in jail. I mean, the charges totaled more than 100 years in jail. This isn't for violent crimes. This is for financial, white collar crime. Over 100 years, it's serious when it comes to that. The numbers they're saying, 10, 20 million US dollars he received. So if he survives the cancer, he'll be straight to jail or the courthouse again.
Okay, so we know about Blazer, and obviously he gave information, and that information was used, and one of the big events that it was used in was when they went into Switzerland as a hotel and they did a big bust. That was the kind of first news story that broke out about this whole FIFA kind of corruption scandal. So what do you know about that event? People, the officials were in some kind of hotel, the FBI or the Swiss police or whoever it was turned up, and basically they gave them the shock of their life and they found out that they were going to get in trouble.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we talk about Blazer's story being out of an espionage film. This truly was 6 a.m. dawn raids. Essentially, the FBI, what was happening was the annual Congress. The Congress we just saw then, it was the annual Congress of 2015. And the FBI had been waiting on this for 5 years, just building up information. They were all outside the Bowerlock Hotel, which is one of the most expensive, luxurious hotels in the world. We're talking £4,000 a night. Obviously, all the FIFA administrators stay there. So obviously, think about it. You've got the FIFA Congress in May in 2015. Everyone flies in, still thinking, at that point, we didn't have the situation we had now. Everyone was comfortable going out to Switzerland. Little did they know that the Swiss and US authorities were camping outside overnight, and at 6 a.m. they burst in. I mean, Switzerland had never seen anything like it. Previously known for its culture of comforting and almost hiding corrupt organizations, or at least dodgy organizations. The Swiss authorities finally just didn't have the power to tell the US authorities no. So along with the FBI, they raided the whole place. They arrested, my understanding is they arrested 14 that morning, but it wasn't just, we're not talking like the little guys. These were 14 of the biggest heads in the game. We're talking CONCACAF presidents, guys who are running whole confederations, CONMEBOL presidents. And it really was a major bust that shook them to their core. They were there at the Congress to vote for the new leader. Obviously, Sepp, we saw Sepp was still voted in somehow. But the fallout and the stories that came out of that that hotel bust alone are amazing. My favorite one being Alejandro Bozzacco. Now, Bozzacco, he's an Argentinian media magnate. He's very much wanted by the FBI for his alleged role in TV rights bribes. And this is the best way to explain it to people who don't quite actually understand where the corruption happened. Essentially, what you'd have is you'd say you've got a Copa America, right? Now, Copa America is worth 100 million pounds to, say, the Argentinian ITV. So they know they can make 100 million pounds off ads and sponsorships. So they say to FIFA, obviously, now listen, FIFA, we'll offer you 70 million pounds to get the rights. And FIFA go, well, we know it's worth 100 million pounds. We know you'll make 30 million pounds. So what we want is, we'll sell it to you for 70, sure, but then I want an extra 10 for my secret payment. So essentially, Bozzacco was the media guy who bought the rights for 70, but actually bought them for 80 because there was an extra 10 going to the FIFA execs themselves. So basically, even if, say, you've got ITV offering 70 million and you've got, who's the other one? Channel 4 going, we'll give you 90 million. FIFA were giving it to the guys offering 70 million. Why? Because it came with a personal 10 on the side. So if it wasn't going to the highest bidder, it wasn't going to the honest bidder, it was going to whoever gives us that bid on the side that isn't official. And the way they gave them that bid on the side, oh, the ways they did it were amazing, including Jeffrey Webb from CONCACAF, the CONCACAF president, who was touted as the man to succeed Blatter. He sent that extra 10 million into his, allegedly, I should say for now, sent it to his pool man. And then when the FBI came out and said, we know who this guy is, he said, I've never heard of him before. They said, he built your bloody pool. Like that's the level we're talking about. You know, back to Alessandro Bozzacco. Bozzacco's been part of all of this, allegedly, we have to say for now. But as obviously all the FIFA heads are sleeping in their luxurious 4,000 pound a night beds, the FBI burst in. Bozzacco, who's some kind of fitness freak, goes for a morning jog every morning, is having breakfast. He's having breakfast in the hotel restaurant as they're bursting in. Any pictures you can source of him, he's always wearing this Denver Broncos cap. So he's obviously put his head down. As they're running in, he puts his head down, cap down, and walks straight out the front door past all – and he was on the list – past all these FBI agents, past all the media, and goes on the run. The second they realize he's not in his room, obviously they put out a worldwide search. Interpol put him on their top 10 most wanted people in the world. And there's a hunt from Switzerland to Argentina to Uruguay, wherever he's got a house, they look for him. 2 weeks later, he turns up in a police station in a little village in central Italy. Again, the thing straight out of The Fugitive, you know?
It's unbelievable. There's just so many little... I mean, you said it to me before, this is a movie, and I think haven't some pretty big Hollywood dogs bought the movie rights?
That's right, exactly. Ben Affleck and Matt Damon have bought the rights to BuzzFeed reporter, I believe his name is Ken Bessinger, who's basically written the story of Chuck Blazer. I mean, you can find his article. He's got a fantastic in-depth article online. But he's written a whole book that chronicles his life from failed button salesman to the man who turned CONCACAF and FIFA, or at least helped CONCACAF and FIFA turn into the organization that it did. And it's fascinating. Obviously, they're fascinated by it. And this is what I say, obviously, to yourself and so many others who see this whole FIFA scandal and go, oh, look, it's men in suits with names I've never heard of in countries and I've never heard of with laws I don't understand. And they just think, oh, it's not my interest. It really is of interest to all football fans. If you just take a small look into these stories, they're fascinating. Not only are they fascinating, they involve all of us, because what everyone forgets about all of this is these guys, they pretend that they helped turn football into the behemoth that it is, but they didn't. They just used our passion and our love for the game. And it's our passion that's been used to make them illegally very, very rich. And that's why I say to everyone that everyone should take an interest in these stories, because A, they're fascinating, but B, we all have a vested interest. It's our money at the end of the day, if you think about it, because our passion and our views and our memberships and our ticket sales and everything else, they fund they fund FIFA.
I agree, and I first of all think it is going to be a great film, because Ben Affleck and Matt Damon were the two people behind my favourite film, Good Will Hunting, so I'm sure it will be call it Good Sepp Hunting. But yeah, that's going to be a good one. Looking forward to that. And what you were saying about the kind of how people feel like it doesn't affect them, I hear what you're saying, but I think a large part of that comes down to the fact that in the same way that, you know, government officials spend our tax money, the reason people feel slightly more attached to that is that they can vote in a government official. Like, I can go and vote for a party and then that guy may be the prime minister. But with FIFA officials, there is no, you know, vote from the general football fan. It's all taken place in these separate congresses where we're not a part of. And, you know, was that ever talked about? Was there ever talked about being an actual, like, you know, democratic vote from football fans instead of elected officials?
That's a very good point and a very good question, Spence. There actually was by one candidate, my favourite candidate and most people in the media, Prince Ali from Jordan. He pushed for a fans role, perhaps on a committee, obviously not with in terms of a vote yet. But no, he was very adamant that fans should have more of a role in the administration and the running of the game. And it only makes sense. But again, he didn't win, unfortunately. But he was influential in Infantino actually winning the election, because obviously after the first round, it was split. The two favorites were split. And Ali used his influence to help Infantino win the second round of votes. So there has been a push by one candidate. Unfortunately, he didn't win, though. Again, Infantino, I believe, will be having to listen to Ali now that he helped him win the vote. So fingers crossed. And I agree with what you say, that the fact that we don't have an influence and we can't vote in these new execs means some people feel, you know, just disenfranchised, and what's the point? But I think, again, we underestimate the power of fans. I know this is far-fetched and maybe a bit too hopeful, but I like the idea of, for instance, 2014, just at the start of the Brazilian World Cup, there were protests amongst the streets of Brazil, but only that, there were protests by ultras of FC Zurich, who are obviously based in FIFA HQ. They, in their hundreds, or if not thousands, marched towards FIFA's HQ with signs showing their discontent. They painted a blood red all over the FIFA signs to acknowledge, obviously, the thousands who will die building and construction stadiums for their tournaments. And I think that if there was just a way that fans could converge, I really feel that all it would take would be a couple of banners from the major teams all around the world, perhaps even a meeting of fans, a united march. Say if we all dedicated one round. I really feel this way. If you dedicated one round for every top division even to unite and say, we are against FIFA, we want to have more influence. I really think everyone still goes to the game, but you have banners and the world shows, from Spain to Hungary to England to Brazil, even here in Australia, we all kind of united. I think the just those images and pictures, the power of an image, really is underestimated. I mean, think about our mate, Lee Sharp, who threw that money over Sepp. That'll taint Sepp for life, no matter what you think of Lee.
I think Lee Sharp was the ex-Man United player. You mean Lee Nelson, don't you?
Lee Nelson. If you think about that image that Lee Nelson was able to create by throwing those fake dollar bills over Blatter, which has tainted his reputation, I really think fans uniting for one round. I mean, you could do. There's so many issues we could use that power for, but really, this one, I really think we are. Everyone's united. Every football fan, or the majority of football fans, are disenfranchised, just unhappy with what FIFA's become and how they're running our game. And I really think we have a power that we underestimate.
I agree. I think ultimately, these things, to get any real change, you have to hit them where it hurts, which normally is financially. And obviously, when the sponsors started pulling out of FIFA, that added a little bit of momentum to the movement. But let's talk about some of the big dogs in this. You know, Sepp Blatter, Platini. You know, Platini was the head of UEFA, was widely tipped to take Sepp's place. Blatter obviously was the president for such a long period of time. What's happening with these guys? They're currently banned from football, is that right?
That's correct. Blatter, number one, FIFA's number one, two and three are all gone for a total of 20 years combined. Let's start with Sepp. He's gone for what is now being shaved. He was given an 8-year ban, which has been taken down to 6. He's now going to appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, but most experts say he doesn't have a chance. He's just doing this to save face. The same charge that got Blatter got Platini. It's a very complicated process, but essentially, if you want to understand it best, in 2011, Blatter personally paid Platini with a £1.35 million payment. Now, it was above board. They lodged it with the tax appeal. They lodged it with the tax authorities. They lodged it with their banks. Nothing suspicious that way. But why was it given? And why wasn't anyone told about it? It wasn't disclosed. It wasn't disclosed to the media. It wasn't. No one in the FIFA exco. I mean, the 24-member highest committee of FIFA. No one knew about it except for Blatter and Platini. Now, why was it made? February 2011. In May 2011 was the FIFA presidential elections, of which Platini had made it public in interviews that he was going to go for. 3 months before, he was given £1.35 million by the man he was going to run up against. And just before the elections, he decided to make it public. I'm not going to go for the presidency. Now, make of it what you want personally. I think we all feel the same way. Blatter, now they never announced that, nothing happened. 5 years down the track, the FBI go through their accounts and find this receipt. Blatter and Platini's explanation? No, that was a payment for work Platini did back in 1999 to 2001 when FIFA didn't have enough money to pay him what we promised. We had a verbal agreement that I would pay him later on. It was for, essentially, I believe he was paid about £200,000 a year short of what he was owed, and Sepp said, I'll get you back in a few years in one lump sum when we're back in the black, when we're making money. They made money by 2002, so why wasn't he paid then? Why wasn't he paid in 2002, 2003, 4, 5? No, he was paid in 2011. How convenient. And then they like to play that they're innocent. And even if, by some crazy logic, all of that was right, that he decided to pay Platini 9 years later, despite the fact by Swiss law you don't have to pay anyone after 5 years, despite contracts, after 5 years any kind of work contract is void and you don't have to pay anyone anything. So first and foremost, you didn't have to pay him anything. Secondly, you had a FIFA election Platini was about to come up against Blatter for. And thirdly, here's the best one, which came out. If Blatter's an old man, he's in his mid-70s now, I think almost 80s. If he had passed away, Platini would have been left with owing £1.35 million with a dead man, with no one else knew about the contract. I mean, it's absolute baloney. No, it's ridiculous. They're treating us like children. And that's what brought them down. And they're trying to appeal it. They're trying to say, no, really, honestly, I really did owe him £1.35 million over a verbal agreement of which I paid 9 years later. It's just, come on, you're treating us with contempt. And that's what brought them down. Valquet, number three, the general secretary, he was, where do you even begin with Valquet? The man had already been done for a charge back in 2006 with MasterCard Visa. Yeah, he was charged by US authorities. FIFA obviously had to expel him, but then Blatter brought him back 6 months later in an even higher role. He was done for a ticketing scam, of which a American-Israeli ticket salesman said that him and Valquet conspired to resell World Cup tickets that were given to FIFA officials for hospitality, but then they sold them. And I believe he's accused Valquet of saying it would be his retirement package to sell. Basically, it was about £5,000 worth of tickets he sold illegally or something like that. I can't quite work it out, but it was a ticketing scam. It was enough for him to be suspended for 9 years. So 1, 2, 3 have gone. I mean, there's enough stories in that alone, but my favorite story coming out of this is Nicolas Lyos. Now, Nicolas Lyos is still currently hiding in Paraguay, where he's avoiding extradition to the United States. This guy's the ex-CONMEBOL president. So he's the ex-head of South America's Confederation, South America's version of UEFA. And this guy, I mean, where do you begin? Let's start with a recent UK parliamentary inquiry into the UK's failed 2018 World Cup bid, where it was revealed that Nicolas Lyos, the Paraguayan, had requested a knighthood in exchange for voting for England. Obviously, you know, the English World Cup committee told him where to go with that. But if you think that was demanding, later on they invite him to watch the FA Cup final besides Prince William. Right, obviously, again, try to entice him and show him this is England, this is the passion of the game. We, you know, this is football's country. Lyos's advisory team, the response, you've got to hear this to believe it. Dr. Lyos is an old man, and to go to England just to meet the prince and go to the cup final is not reason enough. If this is perhaps combined with, say, the naming of the cup after Dr. Lyos, then that could be reason enough. The man wanted the FA Cup named after him just to come and watch the game.
That is outrageous. I mean, come on. These guys, who do they think they are? It makes you wonder. It really does. Okay, well, let's talk about the here and now then, in the future, which hopefully is going to be a bit brighter for FIFA and for football. Obviously, the Congress that happened the other day, Infantino was voted in. But before we talk about him more, what about the reforms? What actually have been changed within the organisation of FIFA?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of positive reforms that have come through. Unfortunately, I'd love to say it's because FIFA wanted to do them, but most people say it's because of the pressure from, obviously, Swiss and US authorities. One of the first things is disclosure of salaries. Blatter was renowned for being able to avoid his salary going public. Many estimated it to be more than $10 million US dollars a year. Obviously, this is perhaps one of the reasons why we were never able to actually catch him earning any back payments, because he didn't really need it. Despite the fact, one of my favorite quotes, which I'll grab here from you, is when asked about his earnings, they asked him, how much do you earn? He said, listen, I'm not an extravagant man. I don't do this work to become rich, but because I believe in it. I don't even wear tailor-made suits. Okay, they're Italian, but I just buy them off the rack. That's one of Blatter's famous sayings. He's not rich. He buys his suits off the rack. So disclosure of salaries. All FIFA members, from the smallest to the highest positions, will have to make their salaries public, and we'll get to know how much they earn. So that's the first one. Our presidents will be limited to 3 terms of 4 years. So basically fixed periods. You won't be able to be FIFA leader for more than 12 years.
That's a big one. That's just the same as what we have in America, for example, with Obama having to leave after 2 terms.
Yeah, and it's a very positive step forward. Even if Infantino turned out to be the best president we've got, 3 terms is more than enough, because after that, you see what happens when they get comfortable. Blatter ran for 18. Before him was João Havelange for 24. I believe in 50 years, there were 3 presidents. It's just ridiculous. So that's going to change. And so the third and most important is the destruction of the FIFA Executive Committee. And the inclusion of more women in higher roles in FIFA through the FIFA Council. So essentially, what you used to have making the biggest decisions was the FIFA Executive Committee, which was 24 men, all aged 50 plus, making the biggest decisions in the game, from who hosts tournaments to, you know, the rules of the game and any changes. That's now been demolished, as the committee that chose, for instance, the Qatar and Russian World Cups, out of those 24 members, more than 15 or 16 have either been arrested or stood down or suspended because of shady behavior. So now that 24-member committee has been replaced by the FIFA Council, which is a 36-member council, which has to include, I think, a minimum of 6 women. And that's really just going to mean that women are going to have a genuine influential role in the running of the game, which is only a good thing, because the people running it before, obviously the men running it before, just couldn't be trusted. And there's many more reforms that have been put in, all positive. There are many more that we'd like to see. But for now, I think it's a good start. I think we just have to wait and see just how it goes.
Okay, good stuff. And then let's finish then, just chatting about Infantino. He's taken over. We talked at the start of the podcast about how he's not far, if not from far away from where Blatter's from, but forgetting the geography of it, what are his key attributes as a person? Like, my main knowledge of him is when they do the draws for the World Cup groups and stuff, he usually hosts them, usually cracks a few dodgy jokes, but you can't hold that against him, because he speaks about 5 languages and he usually speaks all of them in the same show. So obviously a linguist, which is a kind of, you know, you kind of have to have it. It's a bit of a prerequisite if you're going to be a FIFA president. But in terms of what he's going to stand for and what he's going to make happen, how confident are you he's the right man for the job?
Look, as far as being an administrator, he's fantastic. He's done a great job. He's been there since 2000. There's no even presumed charges against Infantino. Most people's reservations, however, is his close relationship with Platini. The only reason he ran for FIFA president was the fact that Platini got banned and wasn't allowed to run. And he vowed that if Platini's appeal was successful, he'd stand down. So obviously you've got to be careful with that kind of, with the relationship he has with someone who has been banned from the organization. However, I just think with Infantino, you just got to wait and see. He seems legitimate, doesn't he? He's got that smile. He seems like a nice guy. He doesn't have that dodgy gaze that Blatter had. But I think it's one of those things we're going to have to wait and see. But like I told you earlier in the podcast, one of the things that we kind of can feel safe knowing is that from now on, the FBI are going to be watching too and scrutinizing every decision made. And these guys know it now. Not only that, they know that there's a whole bunch of their mates in Swiss or US prison cells singing like canaries. They know that they have to watch what they're doing now. And it means that hopefully we're not going to see the kind of decisions we've seen in the past. We're going to see a more honest way of running the game. And I guess it comes back to the, you know, that age-old saying, only time will tell. But all I can say is, let's just hope the FBI stick with it. God bless Team USA, because they've hopefully made one of the biggest changes in football. And and if it doesn't change, let's as fans unite and genuinely take an interest and genuinely stand for an honest organization running our game.
Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much for catching us up on it all, Ellie. Where can people find more about you? Like, where can they follow you and whatnot?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, most people know me from YouTube, where I present for Copper 90, one of the biggest footballing channels in the world. But I guess if you want to know more information about it, I'm always keeping tabs with it. I'm on Twitter, at Elmengem, E-L-M-E-N-G-E-M. And yeah, if anyone's got any questions or queries, please send them my way, because I really feel that football fans should be taking more of an interest, because, like I said, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon have bought into this story for a reason. It is compelling. It is the stuff of mafia espionage tales, and it really is only going to get more interesting as more guys get brought down and more guys keep working with the authorities.
Fantastic stuff. Ellie, thank you very much, mate. Enjoy life down under. I'll see you soon.
Yeah, 100%, man. Speak soon.
There you go, guys. That's the end of my chat with Ellie. I told you at the start of the podcast, this guy just knows so much about football. He's like a sponge. He's so many details and stories, and he's a real kind of expert when it comes to, you know, the culture of football, the things going on in and around the game, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch. So do check him out on Twitter, as he said. If you want to keep up to date with Ellie, it is at Elmengem, E-L-M-E-N-G-E-M. So that is it for season one of the Spencer FC podcast. Thank you to everyone who's been listening from the first podcast. If you missed any, feel free to go back and listen to them. I am going to come back with a podcast at some point in the future. I don't know when. So stay tuned to my Twitter for information on all that stuff. But for now, you can still see me on YouTube, on Twitch, obviously on my other social medias, Twitter, Instagram, etc., Snapchat. So yes, that's it. And for one last time in season one of Spencer FC podcast, I will say to you all, don't go changing.